So to kick off this afternoon, we've got another panel discussion, and to talk through the concept of regulation speeding up adoption of real-time payments in Australia, we have to join us Katrina Stewart, Head of Engagements at MPPA, Tony Richards, Head of Payments Policy at RBA, and Melisande Waterford, General Manager Strategic Programs at APRA. So if you'd like to come up to the stage. Now, as mentioned earlier this morning, the Reserve Bank published just yesterday a conclusions paper on the new payments platform, which covers areas around the functionality of the platform and the access to using the platform. And we're going to start off the session with Tony giving us a sort of 4 to 5 minute précis of a 38-page report. So over to you, Tony.
All right. Thanks very much, Lance. I should note that the report that we put out yesterday is done jointly with the ACCC. It's not just the Reserve Bank. I'll try to give you an overview of the report, the conclusions from the report. This comes from a consultation that we announced late last year, which was to look into access and functionality in the NPP. The report concludes that the NPP is largely providing the functionality that the bank asked the industry to deliver when we did the strategic review of innovation in the payment system back in 2012. So the four particular gaps we identified back then were that payments should be real time. They should be more data-rich than they were at that point. Payments should be more easily addressed than sending something to a BSB, an account number, and that payments should be available 24/7. And our assessment is that the NPP has met, has well and truly provided the functionality that enables the provision of those services. But the ability of end users to benefit from all that central functionality depends on what their financial institutions have done and the services that they get from their financial institutions. And as we say in the report, the rollout of real-time payments by financial institutions, especially some of the larger ones, has been slower than we hoped for, and it's been uneven. Different banks have prioritised different customer segments. They've prioritised different channels, etc. So customers aren't yet seeing all the benefits that come from ubiquity, or all the network benefits that we expect to come from the NPP. And that's especially true for business customers because the banks have typically prioritised their consumer customers here. So that's prompted some entities to complain about the NPP, when in many ways it's not a problem with the NPP, it's a problem with the services that are being provided by their financial institutions to take advantage of the NPP. What we've seen is that the rollout of things that we hope would be ready on day one is still proceeding, and so that's delayed the ability of the industry to bring on some of the things that we hope would be ready to go on day two. So, for example, some of the overlay services that we hoped would have been up and running by now. So that's request to pay and payment with document have been delayed. And the ability of NPPA to put in place central functionality or native functionality independently of overlays, things like the consent and mandate service, that's being delayed by the fact that some financial institutions are still working on their day one rollouts. So what do we do about this? Well, the simplistic thing would be to to say that if we could wind back the clock, some financial institution should have started a year earlier or 2 years earlier, and they should have better anticipated the problems that come from trying to modernise their legacy systems. But that's obviously something that we can't do. But what we're doing is that the Reserve Bank is engaging with the major banks, in particular at senior levels, to encourage them to make sure that they're prioritising their continuing work on NPP functionality. A second thing we're doing is that we and the ACCC are recommending that we should strengthen NPPA's hand, so that's New Payments Platform Australia's hand, in dealing with its participants. So one of the recommendations in our report is that NPPA should have the ability to impose mandates on its participants that they must support some type of functionality, and if they don't, that NPPA should be able to impose penalties on them. This is the sort of the ability to impose mandates and impose penalties exists in some other payment systems, in particular the international card schemes, and we think it'd be appropriate for NPPA to have it. I'll touch more briefly on some access issues. The first thing to note is that there are about 80 participants there are about 80 financial institutions that are now providing NPP services or NPP related services to their customers. So in many ways, it's been a real success story that we've had very wide access in Australia compared with some other markets, and that's largely the fact that among the 13 participants who've subscribed to and funded the NPP, there are three aggregators who are providing indirect connections to about 70 smaller banks and mutual institutions, and that's been a great success that small banks have been able to connect and offer fast payments faster than some of the large institutions. It is the case that there is some concerns about access to the NPP. This is both in terms of becoming a participant or also setting up an overlay service. So we've made a few recommendations in the report. One is that the NPPA should look at its current rule that to become a participant, an entity must be an ADI, an authorised deposit taking institution. The fact is that there may be some classes of entities out there that want to connect to the NPP directly, that it's actually a major task to connect to the NPP, but they still want to do it. And they are a provider of payment services, so it would benefit them to do that. But they simply cannot become an ADI because they're not doing the sort of business that APRA requires for them to become an ADI, for example, taking deposits. So we're asking NPPA to come up with an alternative form of access for entities that are not ADIs. We're also asking NPPA to review its rules on capital contributions. We think it's thoroughly appropriate that NPPA should have rules requiring entities that could have signed up on day one but chose to sign up on day two but may choose to sign up shortly. We think it's thoroughly appropriate that they should have to make a capital contribution that's probably broadly similar to what they would have had to make had they signed up to be a day one participant. But it may be the case that there are smaller entities that didn't exist at the time that the NPP was initially funded. And we're asking NPPA to review its capital contribution rules to see if there's possibly a lower capital contribution for smaller entities or entities that didn't exist at the time that the NPP was funded. We're also asking NPPA to review their procedures for dealing with applicants who want to become participants or overlay services. The concern has been expressed that an entity might want to become a participant or an overlay service in the NPP, but it would have to, the decision to allow it to become a participant or an overlay service is in the hands of the NPP's board, and the board consists of financial institutions, some of which will be competitors to the potential participant or overlay service. So we're asking NPPA to consider whether those decisions could be made by the independent directors, with the financial institutions sitting out from that process. We're asking NPPA to respond to the report by the end of July, and that we're proposing that the Reserve Bank and the ACCC will do another formal review in 2021. In the meantime, we will be monitoring the progress in that institutions are making in rolling out NPPA functionality to their customers. We'll also be looking at any access concerns that are expressed to us. In the event that there were problems, we could certainly consider designating the NPP and imposing an access regime on it. Or if we were more concerned about the services that financial institutions were or weren't offering to their customers, we could potentially consider imposing some standards on participants in the NPP regarding the services that they must offer to their end users. But for the time being, I think we think the NPP is a wonderful new set of payment rails for the Australian economy. It'll be a platform for innovation, and we note that the uptake, the volume growth in the NPP is running ahead of some equivalent fast payment systems in other jurisdictions. So there certainly is a good story to tell from the NPP, and we hope that as some of these recommendations can be implemented, that we can see even better services provided to end users.
Thank you, Tony. We'll return to the report later on. But I might ask Melisande to explain APRA's role in this, because not everyone would see APRA playing a role in the NPP versus the RBA or ASIC.
Okay, so I wouldn't say that APRA has a direct role in the NPP, my substantive role, which is different to the one up there, is the head of our licensing unit. So we have been engaging with a lot of players that are interested in entering the Australian market in various different forms. And there is quite a lot of inquiries and quite a lot of interest in potentially sometimes getting an ADI license, which appears to be motivated either by a lack of clarity about what type of access they may or may not want or need, or indeed concerns that without direct access that there might be competitive impacts or other sort of pieces. So it's a space we've sort of been dragged into conversations at different stages about, and it's an area that we have quite a bit of interest. Prudential regulation is not something that you'd want to do for fun. And it's quite difficult for new entrants to establish themselves anyway. So it's sort of fundamentally in everyone's interest that the people who want to become an ADI actually do want to become an ADI.
So, Katrina, part of the report from the RBA and ACCC is talking about access. It would seem that there's lots of ways to access the NPP already, given the fact that 80 institutions have lined up. So is the criticism we've seen in the media fair, or are people just not aware of the ways that they could link in?
I think a large part is education and awareness around those different options for how to interact with the NPP. So we do have a number of different ways. You can become a participant and connect directly. You can connect indirectly as what we call an identified institution, which doesn't require being an ADI. We even have something called a connected institution, which is for organisations that might want to be able to initiate payments. They're not actually processing the payments themselves, but if they felt that their business model warranted it, they could connect directly in order to initiate those payments. So we feel that there are a number of different options. I think education and awareness around some of those different options is important, and we continually try to put information out into the market and educate people around those different access pathways. We do find a lot of the time that people come to us and say, we want to be able to connect directly. And when we actually say, well, what are you trying to achieve? What is it that you really want to do? And when we kind of walk them through that, they understand that that connecting directly is not necessarily what they want to be able to do. They want to access the MPP in order to be able to make and receive payments or offer payment services to our end customers, but that doesn't require having that direct connection. And what they also don't understand is actually the technical requirements that's actually required to stand up an MPP payment gateway. So there's availability, there's resilience, there's security, which is obviously of paramount importance to us, to ensure that we safeguard that, given we're talking about the real-time movement of money. And they, I think, sometimes underestimate what's actually involved.
I mean, Tony, from a security point of view, do we really want hundreds of people connected to this infrastructure?
Well, that's not the way that most payment systems work. Most payment systems work that you have a relatively small number of direct participants, and then lots of entities connect indirectly. And that's what we're seeing in NPP. You've got about 70 smaller banks, credit unions, building societies that are choosing to connect through three aggregators. But I think it's increasingly becoming the case that some of the major banks are also offering indirect connections. So, as Katrina said, it's an expensive business to set up an NPP gateway, and many institutions are saying, It's much easier for us to connect through someone else who's already set up that gateway, and there's about 70 institutions doing that.
That's right.
So Katrina, have many people actually applied to deliver an overlay service or become a participant?
So to date, we've had no applications for either a participant or an overlay service. There has been a lot of interest, but as we walk people through what it is they're trying to achieve, they realise there's other better ways for them to do that. I'd just like to maybe touch on the overlay service piece, because we've kind of spoken about the access piece. I think there was a common misperception in the early days of the MPP that an overlay service was like having an app and putting it on the App Store. And certainly, particularly from the fintech segment, there was a lot of misconception around that, that people thought it was really sort of as simple as that. And that's not the case at all in terms of an overlay service. And I think also what we've found is that a lot of organisations, and particularly fintechs, can actually achieve what it is they're looking to achieve by just using the MPP and using its capability and using what's there. Certainly there are some capability kind of shortfalls at the moment they're actively working to address in conjunction with the participating banks, and particularly payment initiation is a really important one for a lot of fintechs. But with those capabilities that are there, a lot of organisations can achieve what it is they want to achieve, and they don't need to create an overlay service. They can incorporate the MPP into their own product and service offering outside of the platform and offer that to customers, such as, you know, we saw this morning from Adrian's presentation, the likes of what Assembly Payments is doing with car sales, with Block 8 and their blockchain solutions, and also organisations like Earned. They're just incorporating that capability.
So this is like people saying they paid by PayPal, but they actually paid using a credit card or a debit account. So I could pay by System X, but OSCO could be in the background.
That's right.
So how are you ever going to get people to understand that?
So a lot of our focus is around that native capability development and trying to help people understand what they can actually do with that capability and what's possible. The more that we have different examples of real-life examples, like some of the organisations we spoke about this morning, that really brings it to life to people, because it's reality. It's not us talking in theory about what's possible. So the more that we see some of those examples emerge, you know, we're trying to kind of shine a light on them to say, look, actually, look what this organisation has done or what this organisation is doing, because I think that really brings it to life, and that's much more powerful than anything that we can say.
And with two regulators on the panel here, what role can regulators play in gaining more adoption of MPP? Or is that your function?
I'd like to go back about 7 or 8 years ago. And the Reserve Bank conducted the strategic review of innovation in the payment system then. Back at that point, we thought the problem was that we industry had trouble coordinating. There was no sense that industry was coming together to deliver fast payments to Australian businesses and households. So our role there was to, we did the review and we told industry we strongly encourage you to build something that will deliver fast payments, and the hint was that if industry didn't do that, that we'd find a way to ensure that fast payments were delivered. And industry took the hint and built it, but it took a fair bit of work to get the industry to sign up to fund the NPP. I remember about 6 years ago, there were people from large banks telling me, we don't think there's any demand for real-time payments. So sometimes they take a bit of persuading, but I genuinely think that there's a demand for immediacy in so many aspects of our lives, and that sooner or later the banks will be trying to meet, or the banks will be trying to meet that demand for immediacy in payments too. So I think we can, for the most part, rely on competition to take advantage of real-time payments. But there are times when industry needs to be brought together in a room and encouraged to work together. We did that with the Strategic Review of Innovation. And we're trying to strengthen the hand of NPPA in its efforts to build sort of central or native functionality in the NPP that can be used by everybody, because the problem there is that it only takes one or two large laggards, and it can slow things down for everyone. So that we are trying to strengthen the ability to cooperate and do a cooperative innovation. And then we expect that it's in the interests of all institutions to compete in the sides in the services that they can. That once they put that collaborative central infrastructure in place, that it's very much in individual institutions' interests to compete to use that functionality to provide better services to their customers.
And I think that regulators, as a general rule, can be a hindrance or a help in this. You can assist. So if I'm speaking from APRA's perspective here, of course the Reserve Bank is never a hindrance. But for regulators like APRA, you can. There is a role to encouraging or being open to looking at new systems, encouraging legacy systems and so forth, and security. And you can take a very conservative hard line about certain things and not adopt an open mind to new ways of doing business, which can ultimately sort of have flow-through effects to the appetite of the institution to engage with some of these types of things. I think from my perspective, trying to encourage new entrants into the banking space, the more that these things get up and running and that people can see opportunities in them, it's difficult enough for a new entrant to get up in this space. So the more opportunities there are that they can sort of think of innovative ways to do it and feel that that's achievable, then I think the better it's going to be for everyone.
So, Tony, your report, to use your word, is full of encouragement and voluntary undertakings and cajoling. There's actually no teeth in this as it stands. Some, and this is hypothetical, but some might say from the banking side that if you'd mandated things, it would become a compliance project which would deliver budget which would make it happen, whereas this might not push it along quite so fast.
I think the bank, Reserve Bank, has made it pretty clear to the large financial institutions that have been slower to implement that we place a very high priority on this. So I think that CEOs and boards are aware of the importance that we place on this, so that it's viewed as very close, if not a compliance project. But I think it is the case that banks have got a lot of balls in the air at the moment. This is not the only thing they're working on in the payments area, and then outside of payments, they've got a lot of things coming out of the Royal Commission. We want them to deliver as fast as is possible, but we wouldn't want them to be taking shortcuts. And I'm not sure that mandating. Mandating would take it would require standard setting. It would require regulation, and by the time we did all that, I'm not sure that we'd get things done any faster. So the banks are well aware that we place a high priority on this, and I think it's close to being viewed as mandatory.
And Katrina, the MPPA's response, obviously due at the end of July. But I think you've already come out with some comments about the report. Could you paraphrase those for us?
Sure. Yes, and I look forward to working on it till the end of July as well. Thanks, Tony. So we came out with a statement yesterday. I mean, overall, we felt the report was very balanced. We felt it was very fair in terms of its assessment of where things are at as it relates to the MPP access and functionality. On the functionality side, we felt that the RBA was very supportive of the agenda that we're trying to deliver with the banks, and acknowledged sort of the work that is currently underway to build that native capability. Some of the recommendations around things like the mandatory compliance sort of framework that was suggested by the Reserve Bank is actually something that's already currently underway. As Adrian mentioned this morning, we've been working on that for a number of months now with the participating financial institutions, because it having sort of a little bit of extra teeth does help the banks to kind of get some of the internal priority. In terms of access, we felt that overall it was very balanced. There are some recommendations there that we'll take away and look at. Certainly we feel that keeping the balance between open access and the safety and security of the system is going to be our paramount importance, and that's our primary objective. So whilst we do have open access as part of our constitutional objectives, we need to ensure the safety of the system given its real-time movement of money. And so making sure that we have those options is going to be important. We're always willing to consider new options around how we might look at things slightly differently, and given the learnings that we have over the last couple of years. We'll look to see how they can be modified. Some of that work, as Adrian mentioned this morning, is already underway, and particularly as it relates to things like the subscription period, et cetera. We're feeling pretty good.
Okay. And Melisande, you spoke about bringing new competition into the market.
It's just actually quite hilarious. We've got someone from industry saying we're trying to balance stability, and you've got someone here saying it's great from a competition
perspective.
Yes. From the regulator. So how's that for ironic?
Yes, reverse positions. But you mentioned about bringing new competitors in. Do we see the role of the MPP as bringing new players into the market?
Well, it's not directly... Our space per se, but I think that things like the NPP make people feel very much more optimistic and feel that there are other opportunities that there might not have otherwise been. It certainly seems to have encouraged some international interest in people with different ideas than they might otherwise have had. I sometimes describe the licensing job as Australia's Got Talent, because some of the ideas may not actually work, but it is interesting nevertheless, and I do think that it does provoke a lot more thought, and I think things will come out of that. Not all of them will be successful, not all of them will come to fruition, but
Tony, was that your thought? I mean, there's a lot in the report about new entrants and having that access for new entrants. Is that what we want, a lot more players in the market?
Yes, subject to the points that, that both the two speakers have said, that that safety and soundness of security is important too. Real-time payments provides greater risks for fraud. It gives banks less time to stop fraud, so it's very important that that new entrants don't bring excessive risk. But in general, the ability to see that a payment has been received in real time must be good for new entrants, entrants for non-traditional players. And when we look at Australia and compare the real-time payments that we've got here versus what's been set up in the US under the Clearinghouse, for example, that's a system that's been set up by 25 large banks. We've got one that's been funded by our large four banks, but it's also been funded by a lot of smaller institutions. And I keep coming back to the fact that there's 70 smaller financial institutions, and some of them absolute minnows. And I think we'll be seeing, I don't think it'll be too long before we start seeing some of the new startup banks also providing NPP services to their customers.
Well, we've already got one with that that's already live offering those services to customers, so there will be more, definitely.
And I also just want to make the point that competition's not always just about numbers of players. So I think it's certainly, when we think about competition, it's also about the offering that's coming to market, and I think that that is certainly changing.
So different offerings, different ways to pay. Mm. I remember a conference a few years back, I made the point it's not like Australians are revolting in the streets because they don't have ways to pay, but this is an extra way to pay. What about global coordination? We heard actually before lunch from NAB about the trials they're doing using SWIFT to make faster payments cross-border. Is there any regulatory coordination underway internationally to make that happen?
Nothing particularly significant yet. There's talk about it. And one of the things that we thought we could do to facilitate the possible eventual linking of fast payment services was by saying that when the industry builds something, it should be ISO 20022 compliant. Because that's the way of the future. So there's no regulatory push, but I imagine that it will emerge in time. But I'd say let's get the let's finish the rollout and get all that day one functionality in place, and let's get some of the planned day two functionality in place, and international links might be day three or four.
Katrina, are there things that you see from inside the NPPA that on the regulatory front are causing friction or could be done differently to speed up adoption?
I'm not sure anything's causing friction. I mean, I think actually one of the successes of the NPP has actually been the role that the RBA as the regulator has played in its early development and in the its sort of close sort of observation of how things were developing as it was being built and then delivered by the participating financial institutions. And I think that that has been part of the success that we've seen. You know, I think certainly there is, I think, that role that the Reserve Bank can continue to play in encouraging banks to roll out capability and sort of providing that gentle encouragement, or maybe a little bit stronger if it's needed. That definitely is a very useful role to play.
I was thinking about Tony's comment about all of the compliance projects that are now underway across the banks across Australia sucking money out of innovation and new product development, because the budgets are being squeezed down.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we all acknowledge that with the Royal Commission, that's had a huge impact. And it's you know, it is taking a lot of resources and effort and time internally within banks, as to be expected, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. But I think there's always challenges, prioritisation. There's always something, and it's a matter of how that's managed. And I think the important thing is how we as an industry work together to focus on what do we collectively need to develop to create the minimum network effect that's required while still enabling the different organisations to pursue their own commercialisation objectives as well. So it is a balance, but I think if we can get that right, then I think we'll all win and we'll all move forward.
Questions from the audience? You've got two regulators on hand here, ready for your bullets.
Thanks, Lance. David Pike from CBA. Tony, I've got two questions for you. One is, during your review, did you look at what other countries or industries have done overseas, like PSD2 in Europe, and go, is that an application that we should apply in Australia, so open banking and payments? And second question is, what does NPP success look like in 5 years' time for the Reserve Bank?
On PSD2, there's a bit of stuff happening already in that area that Melisande and I could talk a little bit about, and that's we are reviewing the framework for purchase payment facilities, stored value facilities, and we're planning on coming up with a new or proposing a new framework that we'll probably. There's a joint consultation underway. It's been underway for a while that involves ASIC, the RBA, and APRA to think about how stored value facilities are regulated. I think we're getting reasonably close to some decisions there, but I can't tell you any more about those. But it's quite possible that you'll see more in that area, and it might be useful if we had a more formal framework for regulation of payment service providers, stored value facilities. So I'd say watch this space, but don't expect anything immediately. Melisande may want to add something on that. What does success look like? We've got a graph that shows the number of fast payments per capita per year, and I'll be watching that graph closely. At the moment, the adoption of fast payments in Australia is running ahead of, well ahead of what happened in the UK, and it's running somewhat ahead of what happened in Sweden, which has been a big success, Swish, their P2P service. But I'm hoping that line continues to rise very, very rapidly. I'm hoping that we'll see continued migration from the slow rails to the fast rails, so that the direct entry system, some of the banks are already sending some of their direct entry payments through the NPP, and I think that's increasingly going to happen. And at some point in the future, the industry may say, you know, is it time to close down the direct entry system? But I think that's still a fair while off. But that would probably be quite a good outcome if there was some rationalisation of the payment rails and all payments could go through the fast rails. I'll leave it there. Maybe Melisande might want to add something on PSD2s.
So we have at the moment what's called a PPF framework, a Purchase Payment Facility Framework, which is a term which is unique to Australia. The only PPF that is actually licensed is PayPal, but there is quite a lot of interest in this space in the market, and the framework is quite old, and the terminology and the definitions and what triggers someone being caught by the framework which by and large at this stage means it gets caught by prudential regulation, means that prudential regulation doesn't necessarily always suit that environment. So there has been a number of reviews, of which the FSI, the Productivity Commission, both recommended a review of the framework and to introduce a more graduated framework. So we put out a joint discussion paper almost a year ago, just looking at options about how we could put in place a graduated framework with sort of objectives of simplifying the framework where possible, retaining the safety that is needed at various different bits, particularly in my space where something is quite deposit-like, aligning more closely internationally, which seems to have two aspects to it. One is actually just even terminology, which would be a big step forward because you sit across the table from someone and you just can't understand what each other's talking about. But also just in terms of the level of requirements and such for different types of entities and so forth. So as Tony says, we're in the sort of the fighting throes of the agreeing sort of a framework sort of internally within the CFR agencies, and we should be reasonably close to coming out with something.
Tony, you talked about the termination of DE. What about the termination of checks? Do we see the MPP driving checks out of the market?
Checks are, check usage is falling very rapidly. Last time I looked at the statistics, the number of checks being written in Australia is falling about 25% per annum. And I think the value of checks is falling by closer to 35% per year, and that largely reflects the rise of electronic conveyancing. I think the fact that some of those high value checks are leaving the system. It'll be for industry to decide when and if the check system is going to be switched off. But the industry, I think, has said, the Australian Payments Council has said that the time is coming closer when an end date could be announced. The challenge will be that the few remaining use cases for checks are not necessarily met by the NPP. We'll have to think about those users that don't, for whatever reason, don't use electronic payments and still like to use paper-based payments. And NPP's not yet meeting their needs, but I expect the end of the check system. The announcement of an end date is not that far away.
You missed me getting criticised by Adrian this morning for using NetBank. There are people out there who don't use any internet banking at all.
My accountant insisted on a check.
Further questions from the floor? No? So, Tony, what in the future, what form of regulation do you see around real-time payments? In most of the payment systems in Australia, there is a regulatory framework. The RBA hasn't sort of put its oar in the water yet on the MPP because it's very early days. Do you see a framework coming out in the end?
I would actually question the premise that most that there is actually all that much regulation. That there are a few instances where the RBA has regulated where we felt that industry was not able to deal with concerns, and it was in the public interest to regulate. But there's not many of them. So there's the interchange standards. There's the surcharging standard. There's a little bit of regulation in the ATM space, but that's it. Now, so we would hope that where we have policy concerns in the area of real-time payments, that industry can deal with them. And we've given a roadmap for some of the issues we'd like industry to address.
And Katrina tells me that you know, industries will, you know, I think understands the policy concerns and is going to attempt to address them. So I think success looks like the absence of regulation for real-time payments, but it would only be if we felt that industry wasn't dealing with our policy, with our concerns.
Well, on that positive note, we might close the panel. So join with me in thanking Tony, Melisande and Katrina for their input. Thank you.